You say, I didn't know he sang. You could just feel that thought going, I didn't know Dustin sang. So, Gerard, we have something very much in common. When I sing in my head, it sounds just like it. So, we do have a lot in common. We are winding down today our story, reading of the story, the telling of the story. 31 weeks, we're on week 30, so we're winding down. But you cannot tell God's story without telling Paul's story. Without telling about Paul and his place in it. He plays such a large part in the telling of the story to the world. He is the central figure of carrying the story to the non-Jewish world, to the Gentiles. He wrote 13 or 14 of the New Testament books, 13 or 14 of the 27 New Testament books. He made three major missionary journeys to the known world, planting churches wherever he went. He was the man. But Paul spent his final days on this earth in Rome. Not on a resort, not on a vacation, not on a speaking tour where he was lauded and applauded for all of his great work. Paul spent his final days sitting in a Roman prison cell. And that would be the last place that he saw on this earth. But there was another famous person in Rome at the same time Paul was there. His name was Nero, the young Roman emperor Nero. Nero had it all. He was a political leader with a great political future. He had a beautiful wife. He had success. He had everything. Nero was a hero. And Paul, well, if you knew who Paul was, he was thought of to be a fanatic, a religious nut, someone who wouldn't stop preaching and teaching about this man named Jesus. He even caused riots at different places because he upset people so bad by preaching about this Jesus. But that's only if you knew him. There's a first century description of Paul. This isn't biblical. This is not in the Bible. It just survived from some of the writings from the first century. They describe Paul this way, his physical attributes. He was bald-headed, slightly bow-legged, strongly built but small in height, had one meeting eyebrow, and a larger nose. By the world standards, he wasn't a beauty. He wasn't handsome, anything to draw the world to him. But that's by the world standards. But if you could see the scars on his back, on his body, they would be a roadmap to the travels, to the suffering, to the adventures that the Lord had taken him on. And although he never walked on the red carpet, was never introduced as that celebrity, we find his sandal prints all over the world. He traveled constantly, preaching and teaching and planting churches. As you go through and look at some of the places that he's been, Galatia, Ephesus, the churches, Thessalonica, Iconium, Lystra, Derbe, Corinth, Philippi, and this is just a short list of them. Do you remember, any of you remember the Russian comedian Yakov Smirnoff? When he came to America, he said that it was just such a shock to him that America had so many instant things. And he said his first shopping trip, he went into a store and he saw powdered milk, and you just add water and you've got milk. And he said, then he shopped a little longer, he saw powdered orange juice, and you add water and you've got orange juice. And then he came along and he saw baby powder. And he thought, America, what a country. But you can't just add water to make a church. You can't just add instant success in a church. There must take work. And so that's why Paul would travel and go and sometimes stay in one place, one city, one region, to plant a church. He might stay there 2 or 3 years, and sometimes under very difficult circumstances. If there wasn't the money there that he could just preach full time and still survive, he would work. He was a tent maker by trade. He made tents, and so he would work in the mornings and preach and teach in the afternoons and evenings, wherever he could, a synagogue, a meeting hall, in the streets, in people's homes, anywhere that they would allow him to preach. He was a tireless worker, and his whole life was about two things, people and churches. People and churches. In between the work and the preaching and the church planning, he wrote letters. Letters to these churches he had visited, and he would write back to encourage them, or maybe he had heard about a problem they were having, and he would write back and give them the instructions of how to straighten things out. But he also wrote to individuals, and to individuals like men that were maybe following in his footsteps, were preaching and staying behind at these churches to lead them. He wrote to a young man named Timothy. And we have two of those letters, what we call 1 Timothy and 2 Timothy. He wrote to another young preacher, Titus. And so we have that letter as one to read. With the pen, he became both the prophet and the pastor. His words could cut deep like a scalpel. He could say things like he said in Galatians 3:1. "You foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you?" And then he'd go through and describe and say, "Why have you turned back from the teachings of Christ and gone back to the ways of the law when you know what's best?" Or maybe like in Galatians 2:11, he said, "When Peter came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he clearly was in the wrong." See, Paul wouldn't back down from anything, not even the Apostle Peter. When Peter was wrong, if he knew something was right, he would never back down from, no matter what the cost was. But then Paul could turn around and write words that have comforted the world for two centuries. Words that have meant so much to us all. Maybe during the time when we're wondering, that Christians were wondering, "We're giving up too much here on this earth to follow this Christ." He would say something like he did in Galatians 3:1. Philippians 3:20. "But our citizenship is in heaven," and remind us, this isn't where we live. Our citizenship is in heaven. Or maybe when things didn't make sense in the world and we didn't know what to do and just it seemed like nothing was working out, he would say something like he did in Romans 8:28. "And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose." Someday it'll make sense. And millions have hung on to those words. Or maybe when we felt like that we were going to lose, that it just wasn't going to pan out in the end, he would say something like he did in verse 35 of Romans 8, "Who shall separate us from the love of Christ?" And then he'd take the next few paragraphs and name everything that you think could, and he would say, "Nothing. Nothing can separate us from the love of Christ." This past Saturday, April 21st, Charles Chuck Colson passed away. If you're old enough to remember, and from my generation, you remember his first claim to fame, if you want to say it that way, was Watergate, the Watergate scandal, the cover-up. He was a part of that. And most people think that Chuck Colson became a Christian once he went to prison, but the truth is he became a Christian before he went to prison. And in his words, he said, "I had to confess and admit as guilty to obstruction of justice in order that I may do away with the old life so that I could begin a new life." Chuck Colson only spent 7 months in a federal prison, but he describes it a life sentence because he never left prison and prisoners behind. It was said that right before he got out of prison, another inmate said, "What are you going to do for those of us that are left behind?" And Chuck Colson said, "I don't know yet. I'll help in some way. I'll never forget you guys or this stinking place." as of the past Saturday, April 21st, prison fellowship started by Charles Colson is in every state in America and in 100 countries. The publications that are sent to prisoners last month were read by over 100,000 prisoners. Chuck Colson never got over his prison experience. I don't think that Paul ever got over his conversion experience. On that road to Damascus, here he was, a man who was taking upon himself to murder and imprison Christians, opposing Christ on every turn. But he never got over the fact that God said to him, "You will serve me, you will be my man to go and preach." And Paul reasoned from that, if God can take someone like me and use me, then he can use anybody. And that's the way Paul lived, and that's the way he preached. And he believed in the grace of God, that there was no one that was too far gone that God could not bring back to him. And so the man who was a legalist became a lover of all people and all nations. He became the apostle to the Gentiles. This man who had accomplished so much in his lifetime as a Jew and a Pharisee, he said, all of those things are nothing but trash compared to one thing, and that's knowing Christ. In talking about Paul, Jesus, you know, he had sent in a vision, he had spoke to Paul on the road, and then Paul went on to Damascus. But he spoke, then Jesus spoke to a man in a vision, a Christian by the name of Ananias. And he says, I want you to go to Paul and help him out. And Ananias says, I don't know about that. He's a mighty dangerous man. And in Acts 9, 15 and 16, Jesus says this to Ananias, go. This man is my chosen instrument to carry my name before the Gentiles and their kings and before the people of Israel. And he did. He did just that. He spoke to the kings of the world, and he spoke to the very lowliest. And he went to the whole known world at that time. But look at that last sentence. I will show him how much he must suffer for my name. And suffer he did. In Paul's own words, he described it this way in 2 Corinthians 11, 24 and 25. He said, 5 times I received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. You see, the Jews considered themselves more humane and the Romans barbaric to give more than 40 lashes. So to prove that they were more humane, they only gave 39. 5 times Paul was beaten. 39 lashes. It says 3 times. He said, I was beaten with rods. I don't know. I can't imagine that. 3 different times. He says, I was stoned. And that's not talking about they threw some rocks at me. If we read the account, it says they drug him out of the city. They were so infuriated of his preaching about Jesus. They drug him outside the city. They stoned him to the point that he laid lifeless and they thought he was dead. So they left him laying outside of the city, went back in the city, but he wasn't dead. That's how bad it was. He said, 3 times I was shipwrecked. He stayed on a ship traveling to these new places to preach and to teach and to plant. 3 different times he was shipwrecked. And he said, I spent a night and a day in the open sea. It's amazing that the man survived. It's amazing, remarkable, that he was able to continue to do the things that he did. And it's amazing and remarkable that he wanted to continue to do these things. Paul wrote in one other place, Romans 5:3, he said, we rejoice in our sufferings. Think about, just name the things he went through. He says, we rejoice in these things. How do you do that? One of my favorite stories, I first heard from Bob Russell, then I heard Dolan use it in a sermon, and then I've used it in a sermon, and maybe a second time in the sermon. So this is either the second or third time I've used it in a sermon. But it's one of my favorite stories. there was a friend who had had a heart attack, and another friend sometime later hadn't seen him all during this time and came to him and said, "Hey, man, how was your heart attack?" He says, "What do you mean?" He said, "It was terrible. It was terrible. I hope I never have to go through anything like that again." And his friend said, "Well, how are things with your grandkids now? Aren't they different?" He goes, "Oh, yeah." He says, "We always make time for the grandkids now. We get to see them. We make sure we see them every week. We always got time for the grandkids." How about your wife, you and your wife? He said, "Yeah." He says, "It's different. We treasure life a lot different now. We make time for each other, and the things that were big before, they're not so big anymore. We just let those things go." "Well, how about you appreciate life? What's it like a sunrise?" He said, "Every day I get up and I thank God I've got to see another sunrise, and life is a lot sweeter." And his friend looked at him and said, "So let me ask you, how was your heart attack?" You see, Paul got it. He got the connection of what this was all about. Paul considered the sufferings joy because he had found the secret. And he tells us that secret, 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 8 and 9. He says, "We are hard pressed on every side, but not crushed, perplexed, but not in despair, persecuted, but not abandoned, struck down, but not destroyed." And then he skips down to verse 16 and 18. "Therefore, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles." And I have to laugh at that. This is a guy who just told, "I went through 5 times 39 lashes, beaten with rods 3 times, stoned and left for dead, shipwrecked 3 times, spent a night and a day on the sea." They're just light and momentary. They're nothing. Wow. "For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal." Paul got it. He understood it. He had anchored his life, his story, in God's story. For 30 weeks, we've been using the illustration of the upper story and the lower story. Our lower story is ours, living with our bumps and bruises and our trials and our tribulations and our struggles and our decisions and our troubles with our children and troubles in our marriages and job troubles and trying to do the right thing and all. But still, there's that upper story that's always running from the beginning of time all the way into eternity, where God is working a plan to redeem us, to bring us back into His family, to bring us back from a life of sin. And Paul had figured out, that story is where I want to live my story. He saw the superiority of that story and said, that's where I will hitch my life to. I told you before that I grew up watching Westerns. Because in that day, Dad controlled the TV. You remember those days, you know, and you didn't have a remote. You know, Dad was the remote. And so we watched what Dad wanted, and Dad wanted to watch Westerns. So I grew up watching that. And I believe it's like 8 out of 10 Westerns that there's a scene where somebody's sitting in jail, and they're going to be hung, and they're building the gallows. And so they're in the jail cell. You're nodding your head because you recognize all that. You can hear them hammering away, building the gallows. And at some point, they tie sandbags to the rope and drop it through the traps and make sure that it'll really work and hang them, you know. And you think about it. They're sitting in jail hearing the thing that's going to kill them being built. Well, Paul didn't hear the gallows being built because he wasn't hung. But Paul knew. His days were numbered. He knew that his days were very close to an end. And he spent those last years in Rome in prison. He knew it was coming to an end. He tells us that in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 6 through 8. "For I'm already being poured out like a drink offering, and the time has come for my departure. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have longed for his appearing. Let me tell you something. We're all fighting for something. We're all fighting for something. It wasn't just Paul. Something in life is getting our best attention. It's getting our most effort. It's getting the most of us, and we're putting everything in for it, and we're fighting for it because it is the most precious thing in the world to us. The question is, are we fighting for the right things? Are we fighting for the things that will last? I picture that parable, that story that Jesus told. You know, the one of the sheep and the goats, where it's on judgment, and he's separating the sheep from the goats. And he says to those, he says, I was hungry and you fed me, thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I needed clothing and you gave me clothes to wear. I was in prison and you visited me. And they said, when did we see you, Jesus? And he said, whatever you did for the least of these, you did for me. Come into your reward. And he turned to the others and he says, I was hungry and you didn't feed me, thirsty and you didn't give me anything to drink. I was in prison, you didn't visit me. I needed clothing, you didn't give me anything. And he said, when did we see you? And he says, what you didn't do for the least of these, you didn't do for me. Now go into your punishment. You see, this is my thinking. It doesn't say this, but I think about those people. They weren't bad people. They weren't evil people. They were just people too busy fighting for things that didn't matter. They were so busy fighting for the things they wanted that you didn't see the hungry, you didn't see the thirsty, you didn't see the ones in prison. You didn't see those things that Jesus said you need to see. I think of that parable that Jesus told of the great banquet, where the man prepared the great banquet and he invited everybody, and they had said they'd come, and then when the meal was ready, he sends the messengers out again and said, come on, it's ready, come on. And they began to make excuses. Just got to do this, got to do that. And so they didn't come. They weren't bad people. They weren't bad reasons. There wasn't anything evil about it. But they were too busy fighting for the things that didn't matter, that kept them from seeing the things that did matter. Something else was more attractive. Pleasure can be more attractive than service. Climbing the ladder of success, more attractive than sacrifice. Winning a ball game, more important than winning a soul. My friends, we are in serious danger when basically everything else is more attractive than Jesus Christ. There's an old saying, he's done quit preaching and gone to meddling now. Well, I'm about ready to meddle. There's a serious problem when Christians find everything else on Sunday morning to be more attractive than coming to be with other Christians to worship on Resurrection Sundays and to come around the Lord's table and to pray together, to laugh together, to cry together, to study together. We're in trouble when everything else is more attractive on Sunday morning. Now, don't get me wrong. Sunday morning isn't all there is to be a Christian. But if we can't get Sunday morning right, we're not going to get anything else right. And the patterns that's not only in this church, but in the Church of America, is that I'm here this week, I'm gone next week. I'm here 2 weeks, I might miss three. I'm here, I'm there. We've got a serious problem in the Church of America, and that includes Macedonia Christian Church, when we find everything else more attractive than the worship of Jesus Christ on Sundays. Now I'll go back to preaching. Chuck Colson maintained that the greatest joy in his life was seeing those living monuments, he called them, seeing those prisoners who had been transformed by the love of Jesus Christ. So our question today is, how do our joys stack up to Paul's, what we're fighting for? How do they even stack up to a Chuck Colson's joys? And that's the question we must ask for the things we're fighting for. Paul never got out of that Roman jail, and I don't mean that that he never got over it. I mean that Paul never got out. Shortly after the writing of Timothy, 1 and 2 Timothy, he was beheaded. But I doubt many people noticed it, because it was just Paul. It wasn't Nero. Oh, and back to Nero. Nero's world came crashing down some short 4 years later. And I may have some of this history confused a little bit, but his first wife murdered his second wife, and in retaliation, he murdered his second wife, or his first wife. And then he became so paranoid about his mother that he stopped trusting her, and he had her assassinated. And he lost the following of the people. And when all seemed lost, he committed suicide. Nero, the one who had it all. Who would it have appeared if you'd have lived back then in that century? And you said, who's going to make the biggest difference in the world? Who's going to be the one who will be always remembered? Going to make the biggest impact on this world? Nero or Paul? Nero. You know it. Nero is the one. Well, let me ask you something. I haven't seen any cathedrals or any churches that go by the name Saint Nero. I haven't read any of the writings of Nero that have circulated around the world for over 2,000 years, translated in every language, that continue to change people's lives, that are penned by Nero. No. Paul didn't walk the red carpet. Paul wasn't rich by the world's standards. He wasn't famous by the world's standards. But oh, how he changed the world. Oh, how he made a difference in this world. When I look out here today and I look upon our church, I see a lot of Pauls. Not by the description I gave earlier. But I see a lot of Pauls, that they're just out doing the best they can. They've hitched their story to God's story. And they're living and sacrificing and not trying to get glory for themselves, just a crown in heaven. And to be honest with you, and I didn't mean this bad in any way, if we left this world, some would notice. But it wouldn't get any headlines, and the rest of the world wouldn't care. But you're sacrificing, you're trying your best to raise your families, to know the upper story, to know God's grand scheme of things. You're serving in your church. You represent Christ in your workplaces. Who will make the biggest difference? Somebody on the red carpet in Hollywood, or you where you live? I'm going to bet on you. So today, we want to offer to you not only the encouragement that Paul offered to stay strong and to hang on and to keep working for him, for the Lord, but also that opportunity to give your life to him. Eric is going to come, and we're going to sing our hymn of invitation. If you're outside of Christ, it's time to tie yourself to God, to his story. To place your membership here, and this be the church where you work out of to serve him. Now's the time. Let's stand together and sing.